The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome back. Today we're really digging into something fundamental, choice theory. We're looking at the work of Michael Allingham, trying to get a handle on how he breaks down decision-making, you know, everything from hitting snooze to, well, designing whole political systems.
Yeah, and our goal here is to get that sophisticated lens he offers. Allingham's work, it's so important because it's not just another economic theory. It really acts as a kind of unifying framework.
Right.
It connects economics with psychology, political science, sociology, areas that often feel pretty separate.
And why is that connection so critical now? I mean, we're surrounded by models trying to predict behavior, right? AI, big companies.
Exactly. And those models can feel, well, a bit thin sometimes. Allingham really confronts that oversimplification. He gives us a rigorous but nuanced way to think about how logic and, you know, emotion kind of wrestle inside us when we choose. It feels like the groundwork you need before you can even talk about things like behavioral economics properly.
Absolutely. You need that baseline, that ideal model of perfect consistency. Only then can you really start to measure how real people deviate from it.
Okay, so let's talk about the person behind this framework. Michael Allingham. Who was he?
He's a really distinguished British economist and academic, known for his work in public economics and, crucially for us today, social choice theory.
And he taught at some major places, LSE, Oxford.
Yeah, London School of Economics, Magdalen College at Oxford, University of Kent. So very established.
What makes his approach stand out? You said it wasn't just economics.
Well, that's it. He's fundamentally interdisciplinary. Mm-hmm. A lot of classic choice theorists, they stayed very deep in the abstract math. Allingham deliberately wove in insights from political science, from how people actually behave.
So he's taking these really dense ideas like axioms and utility functions, which sound intimidating.
Totally.
Making them accessible, but without dumbing them down.
That's the trick he pulls off, yeah. It's quite something. He presents choice theory almost like a classical framework. Powerful, essential, but he's always aware of its limits in the messy real world.
So he's not saying this is exactly how people think.
No, not quite. He's saying, look, first you have to understand this perfect logical structure. Only then can you properly identify and, you know, measure all the ways we seem irrational.
Got it. Okay, let's try and unpack the book's main idea then. You said it uses rational choice theory, but as a benchmark.
Exactly. Think of it as the gold standard for what a consistent choice looks like. Not necessarily a good choice or a moral choice, just consistent, logical.
And the book builds this up step by step.
Yeah, it's structured like a journey. Starts really clean. One rational person making choices where everything's certain, defining preferences, how they maximize utility or satisfaction. Simple enough.
Okay, but life's not simple or certain.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So the next layer is complexity. First, adding risk where you know the odds, like gambling, and then uncertainty or ignorance where you don't know the odds.
Which is where most big decisions happen, probably.
Definitely. Then it zooms out further. Strategic interactions, that's game theory. Now, my best move depends entirely on what I think you're going to do.
And then the final leap.
Up to the biggest scale, society. How do you possibly combine millions of different, often conflicting preferences into one collective decision? That's social choice theory.
So the big takeaway is, even though our choices are swayed by emotions, context, all that stuff,
right,
this theory gives us the essential tools to analyze and even predict behavior better, whether it's buying coffee, voting, or making company strategy.
That's the core argument, yes.
Yeah.
It provides that foundational framework.
Okay, let's dive into that toolkit, starting right at the beginning. Rationality. You mentioned it's not about being smart. What does it mean here?
Yeah, it's a really specific definition. In choice theory, rationality just means consistency. Internal logical consistency.
That's
it. It's not about wisdom, success, or morality. Like I said, if you consistently choose mud over cake every single time under this definition, you're rational. Your choices might be weird, but they're consistent.
Huh. Okay. That's a key distinction. And this consistency rests on just two main rules or axioms.
Two cornerstones, yeah. The first is completeness.
Completeness.
Meaning for any two options, let's say A and B, you always have to be able to compare them. You either prefer A to B, prefer B to A, or you're indifferent between them. You can't just say, I can't compare these.
Okay, makes sense. What's the second one?
Transitivity. This one's maybe more powerful. If you like A better than B and you like B better than C,
then you have to like A better than C.
Exactly. It's just basic logic. A, B, B, C, therefore AC.
And why is that so crucial? What happens if you break that rule?
Well, if you violate transitivity, say you prefer A to B, B to C, but then suddenly you prefer C back over A, your preferences become cyclical, they loop around.
Like chasing your own tail.
Pretty much. You can become what economists call a money pump. Someone could theoretically keep trading options with you in a circle and drain your resources because your preferences aren't stable. So, completeness and transitivity, these two simple ideas, they're the absolute bedrock. Utility functions, assigning numbers to how much you like things, are all built on them.
Okay, so we have this perfectly consistent individual. Now let's throw some real-world problems at them. Uncertainty. You made a point earlier about distinguishing risk from ignorance.
Yes, that distinction is critical for deciding which tools to use. Risk is when we know the probabilities. Think casino games, insurance stats, the odds are calculable.
Okay.
Ignorance, or deep uncertainty, is when we just don't have reliable probabilities. Think about the impact of a totally new technology or a sudden political crisis. The odds are basically unknown.
So how do we handle risk where we do know the
For
probabilities?
that, we have expected utility theory, or EUT. It's huge in finance and insurance.
How does it work?
It basically says you calculate the value of an uncertain gamble by taking the utility, the subjective value of each possible outcome, and weighting it by its probability. Then you sum them up.
And that explains insurance, because mathematically, insurance is usually a losing bet in terms of pure dollars, right?
In terms of expected money, yes, the insurance company has to make a profit, but EUT explains it perfectly. The utility you get from avoiding a disastrous outcome, like your house burning down, is massive. It far outweighs the small, certain cost of the premium.
So you're paying for peace of mind, essentially, the utility of security.
Exactly. You value avoiding the catastrophic loss more than the average dollar outcome. That's rational under EUT.
Okay, but what about ignorance? When we don't know the odds, EUT breaks down then.
It does, because you have no probabilities to plug in. So Allingham discusses simpler decision rules for these situations. One famous one is the maximum principle.
Maximin. Sounds like maximizing the minimum.
Precisely. It's a very cautious, risk-averse strategy. You look at all your options, identify the worst possible outcome for each one, and then you choose the option whose worst outcome is the least bad.
So you're basically planning for the absolute worst-case scenario.
Yes. Think about designing safety features for a nuclear power plant. You don't play the odds. You prepare for the worst imaginable failure, even if it's incredibly unlikely and expensive. You maximize the minimum possible outcome safety.
Okay, so we've got our individual dealing with uncertainty, but most of life involves other people, and my choices affect you, your choices affect me. This sounds like game theory.
You got it. This is where it gets really dynamic. Strategic thinking, as Allingham puts it, transforms individual choice into a complex dance of anticipation and response. It's not just about optimizing for yourself in a vacuum anymore.
And the classic example everyone hears about is the prisoner's dilemma.
It's the classic, for a reason. You have two suspects, arrested for a crime, held separately. The police offer each one a deal, betray the other, and you go free while they get a long sentence. If both stay silent, they both get a short sentence. If both betray.
They both get a medium sentence, worse than if they'd both kept quiet.
Exactly. And the kicker is, for each individual prisoner, acting purely in their own self-interest, the rational choice is always to betray the other one, regardless of what they think the other will do.
So they both betray and both end up worse off than if they'd cooperated.
Right. It perfectly illustrates this really profound, sometimes uncomfortable, truth. Individual rationality doesn't guarantee collective rationality.
That seems hugely important.
Oh, it is. It highlights why we need things like trust, cooperation, social norms, contracts, laws, institutions that help us overcome these dilemmas where purely selfish logic leads everyone down. Interestingly, if you play the game repeatedly, cooperation becomes much more likely. People learn to trust or learn the consequences of betrayal.
Okay, so if coordinating between two people is tricky, what happens when you scale it up to millions? Trying to make a collective decision for a whole society. Social choice theory.
This is maybe the most intellectually challenging part. How do you take millions of diverse, conflicting individual rankings of options, like political candidates or policies, and mash them together into a single, coherent social preference?
Sounds impossible just saying it.
Well, that leads us directly to Kenneth Arrow's groundbreaking work, Arrow's impossibility theorem.
Impossibility theorem, that sounds final. What does it mean for democracy, for instance?
It's pretty staggering, honestly. Arrow proved mathematically that no voting system, no method of combining individual preferences, can simultaneously satisfy a small handful of conditions that seem obviously fair and desirable.
Like what kind of conditions?
Okay, well, one is basic, non-dictatorship. The outcome can't just always mirror what one single person wants. Seems fair, right?
Absolutely.
Another key one is independence of irrelevant alternatives, IIA. This means your choice between A and B shouldn't suddenly flip just because some third option, C, which nobody's going to choose anyway, becomes slightly more or less popular. The ranking of A versus B should only depend on how people feel about A and B.
That sounds reasonable, too.
It does. But Arrow showed you simply cannot design a system for three or more options that guarantees non-dictatorship, IIA, and a couple of other equally reasonable conditions without running into paradoxes or logical contradictions.
Wow. So the struggles we see in democratic decision-making aren't just about politicians arguing. There's a fundamental logical problem underneath it all.
That's the bombshell insight, yes. It reframes the challenge. It's not just practical difficulty. It's a deep mathematical constraint on what's even possible when aggregating preferences.
That really changes how you think about it.
Mm.
Okay, so bringing this all together, what are the main messages we should take away? Let's try for three core themes. The first seems to be that redefinition. Rationality as consistency, not perfection.
Right. And that's crucial because it keeps the theory relevant. It allows room for concepts like bounded rationality. The idea that we humans aren't supercomputers. We have limited time, memory, brain power.
So we take shortcuts, use rules of thumb.
Exactly. Heuristics. Choice theory, understood this way, helps us measure the gap between that perfectly consistent ideal and our actual, often shortcut-driven behavior.
Okay. Second theme, the universality of trade-offs.
Yes. We often think opportunity cost just applies to money. If I buy this, I can't buy that. But Allingham stresses it applies to everything. How you spend your time, your attention, even your social energy. Every choice means not choosing something else. It's fundamental.
That's a good reminder. And a third theme.
Maybe the most useful one for applying this. Choice theory as a normative benchmark. The theory isn't powerful despite its failures or paradoxes. It's powerful because of them. Because those paradoxes, those places where reality deviates from the perfect model, they act like a map. They pinpoint exactly where and how human behavior systematically departs from pure logic. Things like loss aversion or caring way too much about the present. The failures are the scientific data.
Okay, that makes sense. The perfect model shows you where the imperfections lie.
Precisely. It gives you the framework to identify and study those irrationalities. You know, the book is just packed with these dense insights. It's hard to pick just a few, but let's try to capture the essence of some core ideas, like this one. Every choice reveals a preference. But every preference exists within a web of social and institutional constraints that shape its expression.
I like that. It pulls the abstract theory right back down to earth. Your choice isn't made in a vacuum. It's shaped by rules, resources, social pressures.
Exactly. You can't separate the choice from its context. Then there's one about strategy. Strategic thinking transforms individual choice from a simple optimization problem into a complex dance of anticipation and response.
The dance metaphor again. That captures the interactive part of game theory so well. It's not a solo calculation.
Right. It emphasizes the back and forth.
Yeah.
And one more. This one feels very practical, especially for policy. Policy that ignores how people actually make choices is destined to fail, regardless of how well-intentioned or theoretically sound it might appear.
Oof. Yeah. That's a direct hit on designing things without considering real human psychology, which leads us nicely into real-life applications. How can we use this stuff?
Well, personally, just understanding biases can help. Take loss aversion. Knowing that losing $100 feels roughly twice as bad as gaining $100 feels good.
Right. That asymmetry.
That awareness can stop you from making classic investment mistakes. Like holding on to losing stocks way too long just because selling them feels like crystallizing the painful loss.
Or why we value something we own more than we'd pay to acquire it, the endowment effect.
Exactly. It's driven by that aversion to the feeling of loss. Professionally, especially in business, game theory is everywhere. Thinking about how competitors will react to your pricing or how to structure a negotiation. Understanding the prisoner's dilemma helps avoid mutually destructive price wars, for example.
You anticipate the dance.
You try to. And for governments, this stuff is gold dust for policy design, especially nudge policies.
Nudges using behavioral insights to gently steer people towards better choices without forcing them.
Yes. like understanding present bias, our tendency to grab immediate rewards and ignore long-term consequences. Knowing this, you can design things like opt-out retirement savings plans. People are automatically enrolled, leveraging their inertia for their own future good. It works with their psychology, not against it.
That makes so much sense. For me, the thing I keep chewing on is Ayer's impossibility theorem. Realizing that the struggle to make fair collective decisions isn't just, you know, messy politics, but a deep logical constraint. It's kind of mind-blowing.
It is profound, isn't it?
It makes the whole democratic project feel less like a failure when it hits problems and more like this ongoing, difficult attempt to grapple with something inherently paradoxical.
That's a fantastic way to put it. And ultimately, I think that's the value here. Choice theory isn't just ivory tower stuff. It's a genuinely practical toolkit. Understanding consistency, uncertainty, strategy, and aggregation helps us make better decisions ourselves, design better systems and organizations, and build smarter, more realistic policies for society. It's about understanding both the power and the crucial limits of rational choice.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.